Okay, I'd like to thank the presenters for really doing a great job. It'll make the cases quite easy. I'm going to go quickly through the cases. My name is Marty Weiser. I'm a surgical oncologist at Memorial Sloan Kettering, and I've obtained these cases from a lot of my colleagues, and some are indeed my own. So we're going to go rather quickly. No disclosures. A 70-year-old metastatic pancreatic cancer. When the fellow calls me with that, I almost always go back to sleep. Metastatic pancreatic cancer usually is not an intervention, but I'm going to show a couple cases where it may be. But anyway, aborted Whipple 2 months ago for peritoneal disease on gemcitabine. Significant past medical history is outlined here. Abdominal pain and a white count of 18. And the scan shows this. We can see a gallbladder with air in the wall. Peter, the question is OR or IR?
So as I mentioned, the cholecystostomy tube is not a magical fix for these, and this is a patient, it's going to depend on how they're doing with chemotherapy. If this is someone who only 2 months into chemo, it's going to depend on their volume peritoneal disease. Small volume peritoneal disease, it is actually reasonable to operate on this patient. They don't have ascites, and even if it's going to require an open cholecystectomy. Open cholecystectomy, there's nothing wrong with that. It means they have a bigger incision. They're in the hospital a few days. They recover. They don't have a tube for 2 or 3 months. They're not on, off chemo, having problems with the tubes. So I think a very low volume disease with a high performance status, I think reasonable to operate, even if you think it's an open cholecystectomy. It's a definitive treatment.
So extensive discussion with family and patient. They chose cholecystostomy tube. The patient recovered. There was a little bit of a tricky recovery, went on to additional chemotherapy, but this is a case where the tube never came out. Tube stayed in forever. 57-year-old with metastatic lung cancer on bevacizumab. We've already heard a little bit about this. Past medical, past surgical history, otherwise negative. History of 3 days abdominal crampy pain. By the time they hit the emergency room at the hospital, they're hypotensive, tachycardic, diaphoresis, peritonitis. Lactic acid is elevated and they're hemoconcentrated. And the chest x-ray in the emergency room is here. You can see some free air. Does anyone want to do anything other than go directly to the operating room? Paxton, any thoughts on this? CT scan right to the OR?
So a little bit of fluid resuscitation given those labs, and during that, have they had a recent scan in the institution or at their treating center relatively recently, and a quick trying to touch base with their medical oncologist. But a patient with that type of clinical presentation, it's hard to argue not to take them to the operating room unless that otherwise there have been kind of end of life towards the end of the line.
So this, do we have to worry about the bevacizumab? Is that going to change this decision making?
I don't think it should change your decision making. I think it just, I think it may affect whether or not if faced with a bowel resection, whether or not to, perform an intestinal anastomosis versus create a stoma. You have to kind of sweat it out while things heal.
Yeah, so I agree. I think this is something that you keep in the back of your mind, but it's not going to keep you from going for free air in this patient who's otherwise doing quite well. Perforated sigmoid diverticulitis was a diagnosis. I think you had brought up the possibilities. Colostomy, resection with colostomy, resection, anastomosis, proximal diversion. I would say that's my least favorite in this setting with bevacizumab. The problem with colostomy alone is that you're leaving the infected segment of bowel in there, so Hartmann procedure would be my preference. Manny, do you use anything special for your fascial closure here with bevacizumab? Are you putting retention in all these patients or just some? I have a colostomy.
Yeah, I routinely use internal retention sutures, and in terms of the wound, you can either debate of leaving it open and use an incisional wound vac or closing it with varicose matrix sutures and put some weeks in to let it heal by secondary retention.
Travis, any comments on retentions in these sick patients, even the neutropenic ones? Do you routinely use it selectively?
I guess you have to recognize they're going to have delayed wound healing, so you have to do something. And so certainly you could do retention, long-acting, permanent sutures, something recognizing that they're not going to heal in the typical fashion.
Okay, seven. The next one, seven. I'm going quickly to just try to get through these. 71-year-old recurrent pancreatic cancer, Whipple 12 months ago, presents with small bowel obstruction. I've always taught the fellows that generally we don't operate on recurrent pancreatic cancer, but yet just recently I did. This is not my case, but anyway. Treat it conservatively without improvement. Operate. What are we thinking about in this setting with a small bowel obstruction? What factors go into your decision? Bridget had to run to another meeting. Peter, what do you think?
So in these patients, you know, after going through what we're going to say with every patient, figuring out where they are in the disease course. So this is a patient who's on treatment, tolerating well, functional, good performance status. The key in these, I think, is trying to figure out how many sites of obstruction and what are you looking at in the abdomen. I've operated on patients like this where there is one single site of peritoneal disease. You'll see a lot of proximal dilated small bowel. You're not looking to do a resection at all. It's just a bypass of that area, and they'll recover and go back to treatment and can live for a year, year and a half, and it could be meaningful for them. But if it looks like there's lots of matted areas of peritoneal disease, the mesentery looks shortened, and you're anticipating eight sites of multifocal obstruction that you can't bypass, are you going to do four resections with four anastomoses and two bypasses? No, that seems like a lot. So a lot has to be predicted off of the scan, but it is reasonable to consider an operation if there appears to be one site of obstruction.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. I think the number of sites of obstruction is a big factor. This was a single site. We have the family meeting. Eric, what? Tell me about this family meeting. Who's going to be involved?
Yeah, I think, you know, just like in radiology, the old films are the best films, and sort of with the family meeting, the people who have been involved with the course of care the longest often are really beneficial. So certainly the surgical folks, your medical oncologist, and then in terms of the family meeting, also making sure, it seems like in this case the patient has decision-making capacity, but if there's a question about capacity, making sure that the right players are in the room in terms of who that patient has picked to represent their wishes.
So this patient is explored. All the anastomoses are seen. There was a single tumor in the liver causing adherence, and so there was a small bowel bypass performed. Patient has a hospitalization of 11 days, readmitted 1 month later. This is right out of Bridget's talk, but dies 3 months later. Brian, is this a success or is this a failure?
Well, yeah, I guess it depends on what the patient tells you. But I think, you know, the ASCO's recently come up with a consensus statement that you should get palliative care involved for really anybody with symptoms due to an advanced or incurable malignancy. So, you know, I mean, it depends. But I think a lot of times, you know, it's not just one bowel obstruction. You have to be ready that, you know, this is, you know, a chain of events that, you know, is going to result in the patient dying in a few months. And so you just have to, you know, focus on their symptoms, try and get them good symptom control. If they had good symptom control and they did what they wanted to do for the last few months, I think it's a success. But you know, just realize that it's a minority of patients that have an obstruction, get through the obstruction, and have a good quality of life for a long period of time. Most of them have recurrent.
So just some feedback on this case, because when I originally looked at it, my answer would be we failed this patient, but talking to the surgeon involved, the family called them afterward and thanked the surgeon for those 3 months of life. It was time well spent. Okay, this one, this may not be so hard. 86-year-old with recurrent esophageal cancer, esophagectomy, third admission for SBO, failed conservative management. They're pushing hard for surgery. 2.5 is both the albumin and the creatinine. This one we know is not going to go well. 66-year-old metastatic G junction cancer, disease in the lymph nodes and liver, treated with Ipi and Nivo. These are immunotherapies. The patient calls, the family calls, they're having diarrhea and abdominal pain, and the medical oncology fellow on call treats with Imodium. So, of course, we know this is a problem. You're on immunotherapy. We've already heard our ears perk up about colitis. Ends up coming into the emergency room, white counts 23. CT scan shows this inflammation mostly on the left side. What's the diagnosis? Hard to say. This can be diverticulitis, immune colitis, or this can be both. And trying to figure that out will determine how you're going to treat this patient. With this perforation, they go to surgery. The surgeon found sigmoid diverticulitis for sure with perforation, but there was a lot of inflammation in the remaining colon and left colon. It was her decision to do a sigmoid colectomy with end colostomy. The patient recovered. It was a rocky course. Pathology did reveal colitis, and the patient did eventually have to be co-treated with antibiotics and then steroids to get through the immune colitis. Okay, so this is a 75-year-old metastatic breast cancer, kidney transplant 3 years ago on immunosuppression, disease in the bone and the liver, on cytotoxic chemotherapy, admitted with neutropenic fever. We heard a great talk on neutropenic fever. Had a DVT, anticoagulated, subdural hemorrhage, gluteal hematoma, UTI, on antibiotics and steroids. You're called to see the patient. They have abdominal pain, but they're hungry. And the absolute neutrophil count's 400. They're on support. Cultures are negative. It's important to check those. CT scan, I'm trying to show you here, is pancolitis. Treatment for this, role for surgery. When do we operate on this panel? Anyone can speak up.
So this is, you know, profound neutropenia, and she's on filgrastim. So you're being maximally medically managed. I mean, if you're going to do this, you're going to have to do a total colectomy with the pancolitis and endileostomy. So, you know, not a small operation. So I think, you know, kind of as we talked about before, it depends on the functional status of the patient, the likelihood for you know, additional therapies and stuff like that. And then, you know, she's going to have to recognize that surgery is going to end up with an endileostomy, and you're not going to ever reconstruct her at all. And so you go basic on those clinical factors. Certainly, it seems like she's, with all the other issues going on, seems like this may be kind of terminal.
So this was treated conservatively. She, supportive care, eventually she ended up in the ICU, acute kidney injury, delirium, hypotension. We don't really have time, but it brings up an interesting question about a transfer of care to the ICU. Some of you may have closed ICUs, and how do you continue this conversation with the family? The patient eventually did recover as the white count improved. I think we've run out of time. I want to thank the panel for some fantastic talks from the audience.